This is the B-side of the lecture, Amos, a Prophecy for Today. Now, looking at the book of Amos, as I said on the A-side of this lecture, you will find that a chronological indication is given here, which was of supreme importance to Amos, and it should be to us. In the very first verse, in the introduction, he explains who he was. Amos, a herdsman, that is a shepherd, from Tekoa, living in the land of Judah, about 10 miles south of Jerusalem. He shows here at the time that he gave his prophecy. It was in the reign of Uzziah, king of Judah, and particularly it was 2 years before the great earthquake, which was devastating. Now we find out from Zechariah, as I said last time, that this same earthquake is going to be like the one associated with Jesus Christ when he comes back to this earth and the Mount of Olives tears in two. When you go to the 16th chapter of the book of Revelation, here is the earthquake like there's never been one before. Even the one in Amos' time is not quite of proportions of the one that will be, but they're similar, you see. The two are connected. Get the point there? The two are connected. And that is associated with the second advent of Christ back to this earth. Now, if that is the case, then we have here some prophecies that were 2 years before the earthquake back there in the 8th century. And let me put it this way. If you have your thinking cap on, if you have your prophetical understanding in proper attire, you're going to understand here the code, the secret that God is trying to tell you. These things here are going to happen 2 years before the major earthquake that will occur at the end of the age. The connection to the person who understands is clear and plain. Now, when you read, however, at the very beginning here of this prophecy, you will find that Amos directs his prophecy here to 8 different nations, all located in the Middle East. In actual fact, they're all located in what we call the Levant. The Levant is the Eastern Mediterranean. It doesn't include Assyria, though Assyria is mentioned in here as an adversarial power. It includes the nations that are in what we would call the Levant, from Syria, Lebanon, Tyre, Israel, and down to Gaza, in that area there. And they are mentioned here. The first 6 are Gentile nations of Amos, and he gives short little snippets here about what's going to happen with them. The next is Judah, and he doesn't go too long into Judah because his prophecy is mainly not to Judah. It's mainly to Israel in the north. And he has a lot to say on Israel. And in actual fact, what is happening to Israel here will be typical of what will happen to Israel 2 years prior to the second coming of Christ, generally speaking. Now, what we find here is this. Look at verse 1. It's verse 2, I should say. It carries on with the introduction. The Lord will roar from Zion. He will utter his voice from Jerusalem. The habitation of the shepherds shall mourn, and the top of Carmel shall wither. That's up near Haifa. Okay, now that's the introduction. Now here's the first. The first prophecy is against Damascus. And you should read this. I have not time to go into it. And the Damascus that's being discussed here is the Damascus of the 8th century B.C., but it also is going to refer to the Damascus 2 years prior to the second coming of Christ. Some people will say, you mean there's going to be a Damascus at that time? Yes, there will be. There is one right now, as a matter of fact. It is the capital of Syria. And though this is 8th century B.C., you have to look at what is going to happen to Damascus in a few years in advance of us. Now, when I said a few years, to really understand it is just before the second coming of Christ. And then it goes on to the number 2, verse 6. It's a prophecy against Gaza, that is the Philistine area. Now, that is the Gaza Strip, the region that we are familiar with today. You remember Arafat? Now, people are wondering whether there's going to be a Palestinian state. I have said for years that there's going to be. And it makes no difference if the Israelis don't want one, or some of them don't. There's still going to be. Now, I'm going to explain something about Israel, those going to be in charge. And let me say this, though. When you look at these geographical divisions here, number 2 is Gaza. Well, number 1 is Damascus. Number 2, verse 6, is Gaza. We find number 3, that is verse 9, is Tyre. That's up in Lebanon. And you go on, it goes number 4 is verse 11, that's Edom. That is a part of Jordan today. And you go on to number 5, verse 13, it's Ammon. That certainly is Jordan. And you go on to number 6 here is Judah. That starts in chapter 2 and verse 1. And then, no, that is number 6, I beg your pardon, is Moab. That is chapter 2, verse 1. And then in verse 4 of chapter 2, we find Judah itself. And then we come in chapter 2, verse 6, to Israel. It's the 8th of the geographical areas being discussed. And it occupies, the prophecy to Israel occupies the rest of the prophecy. So here is this prophet from Judah, who comes from the herdsmen of Tekoa, giving a prophecy to ancient Israel. But at first he gave it to these 7, including Judah. And 6 of them happened to be Gentile: Moab, Ammon, Edom, Tyre, Damascus, and Gaza. Okay? Now, some people have wondered whether or not there will actually be 7 different nations over there 2 years prior to the second coming of Christ. Let me tell you frankly, yes, there will be. And there will be Israel. And Israel is going to control the whole thing, though. Let me mention something which is very important. You know, at the very time that Solomon was reigning in Israel, and you be sure you understand this principle, it's most important if you're going to comprehend prophecy for the next few years. At the very time that Solomon controlled the whole world for all practical purposes during his 40 years of reign, which was known as a golden era in Israel, a golden era for the whole world, do you know that he did not even have political control over Gaza and the Philistine area? He didn't. Now, he had economic control. In fact, he had economic control over Egypt, over Assyria, over Babylon, over the Anatolian countries, over Europe, all the empire of Tyre. You see, one man told me one time, a professional lawyer, he says, "Ernest, it is not what you own, it's what you can control that makes all the difference in the world." Solomon thought and knew it was politically expedient not to own in a sovereign way the Philistine territory. Well, my, he wanted them to have their own. He allowed the other nations to have their own kings. All he required is they send in their princesses, and, you know, the harem that he had were political alliances. That's what he had, from all over the world. It's not that Solomon himself controlled the world politically. He controlled it economically. He controlled it through prestige, through power and authority vested in him. And that is the way Israel is going to do it. And they're going to have to recognize that. I mean, the Israel today, if they want to create an Israel that controls the whole Middle East, they're going to fail. They're going to have allow the nations to exist, as the prophecies show here, but through sheer economic control, they will themselves dominate the whole area. And this prophecy that we find here in Amos is setting up that very thing. If you want to know what the political types of situation will be, read Amos here. It's already beginning to show you. And if you would like further a definition of it, you can go to Psalm 83. Which also mentions about some other nations, including Assyria, that are going to make up a 10-nation confederation. All of it is right here, and it's in the book of Revelation, too. It's also in the book of Daniel. So that is what we have to understand, that there will be nations over there that will not be a part of Israel, but they will be under the control of Israel. You take in the time of Solomon, well, Hiram, remember, he was the king of Tyre. And he had control over Tyre, and he had the whole Western Mediterranean basin to himself. But who is it that controlled Hiram economically? Solomon did. That's the key. Now, that's one of the first things you should understand about the book of Amos. Because when you read this and you say, why, this is talking about the 8th century, and some of these kingdoms don't even exist today. You just wait. You don't have very long to wait to see some of these things begin to coalesce. Because the events here are going to take place 2 years before the earthquake. Now, what do we find here in these prophecies? that Amos is giving, primarily to Israel. The main concern that he has is with establishing religious sanctuaries in wrong places. He is telling them they ought to get back to the right place. And until they get back to the right place, they are going to be in trouble. The right place is Jerusalem, out of Zion, and not in other places. The whole of the prophecy here is about evil that has been subjected upon the nation of Israel and the people, because the leaders following in the footsteps of Jeroboam, who, by the way, is mentioned twice in here, as one of the kings, as the major king that led Israel astray. And you know what they did? He took Israel away from Jerusalem in the right spot. And he raised up shrines at Bethel and Dan and other places. That's one of the major thrusts of Amos. You read this whole book. Now, obviously, in this one-hour lecture I'm giving to you, I can't go through every single verse, and you wouldn't want me to in this lecture. I'm giving you the overall principles that you should look for. What he is showing here is that they are actually looking good on the surface as though they are God's people, that they are Yahweh's people. But in actual fact, they have incurred upon the nation of Israel a type of Gentile teaching that is really not Israelite at all. It's not Mosaic. In fact, one of the major points that he has to bring out, I'm talking about Amos here, he says this, he says, what do you do with the festivals? Chapter 5 and verse 21. I hate, God says, I despise your feast days. I will not smell, that is, the sacrifice, in your solemn assemblies. Though you offer me burnt offerings and meal offerings, I will not accept them, neither will I regard the peace offerings of your fat beasts. Take you away from me the noise of your songs, which they would sing in religious services. And I will not hear the melody of your viols. But let judgment run down as waters, and righteousness as a mighty stream. Have you offered unto me sacrifices and offerings in the wilderness 40 years, O house of Israel? That's back there in the time of Moses. But you have mourned the tabernacle of your Moloch, and Kew in your images, the star of your God, which you made to yourself. Therefore I will cause you to go into captivity beyond Damascus. And Stephen in the New Testament said, beyond Babylon. That was a prophecy back there for the Israelites. That's quite true, and that happened. But what was he interested in here? God. They had the holy days normally on the right days. But what they were doing, they were misinterpreting them. They were bringing in heathenism. And one of them was a god, a star god, a god that they saw and had from heaven. And you know, when you really look at some of the things that now indicate what Israel is, are they completely free? I ask this as a question. Are they completely free of paganism to this very day? Well, do you know the star that symbolizes the nation of Israel today is the six-pointed star, but in actual fact, when you look at it, it's two triangles superimposed over one another, and one of the triangles is 180 degrees away from the other. And what is a triangle? It symbolizes nothing more than the Trinity, the pagan Trinity. You will not find that in the Old Testament. You won't find it there. And they have superimposed those things on it. What? Now, that is a modern invention. It's not as far as we know. But this is talking here about ancient Israel as well as modern Israel. What they're going to have to do is to get rid of the idolatry out of the land. And Zechariah speaks about it. And it's not only we Christians who have been subjected to idolatrous acts and things of that nature. Even many of the holy days that the Jews have accepted. And right here it was in ancient Israel, God is displeased with. And there is some of these the things that are going to happen. And we're also going to see some astronomical things taking place. He even mentions here in this same chapter here, verse 4 of chapter 5, for thus saith the Lord unto the house of Israel, seek you me, and you shall live. But seek not Bethel, you see, the wrong place to worship. nor enter into Gilgal, down there just east of Jericho. They had a place down there. And pass not to Beersheba, where Abraham raised up a tree, which was a symbol of the tree of life. But a wrong kind of a relationship was later on established at that place. You know, it seems like every place that God ever made where a holy event took place, which was true and right, people come along and they change it into heathenism. And even this spot down there where Abraham himself, the father of the nation, actually raised up a tree. Here were the Israelites, along with the Jews, going right down there to Beersheba. For Gilgal shall surely go into captivity. Bethel shall come to naught. Seek the Lord, that is Yahweh, and you shall live, lest he break out like fire in the house of Joseph, that's the northern Israelites, and devour it, and there shall be none to quench it in Bethel. I'm going to wipe out Bethel. And you know he has. So wiped out is this Bethel at this present time that you know scholars today are not sure where it is. That's a fact. About three different sites are suggested. And scholars are not sure which one is right. Now, I usually take people to a place just north of Ramallah, to Betin, and it's one of the possible sites. But there are others that have been suggested. And you know, we do not know to this very day where the ancient temple of Jeroboam was. God has completely, by historical event, taken, as an example, taken it out. He's going to take out the idolatry and the other things out of Israel today, which they have absorbed. And by the way, let's not blame the Israelis too much, because what about us? What about we in the Christian world with our steeples, with our crosses, with our pictures of a long-haired Jesus, and all of that, which is not true? We are worshiping the gods of the heathen, and we think we're worshiping the God of the Bible. Look at verse 7. You who turn judgment to wormwood and leave off righteousness in the earth. Seek him that makes the seven stars. That's the Pleiades. That's in Taurus. Seek him who made the seven stars and Orion and turns the shadow of death into morning. In other words, don't go after and worship Orion. Don't worship the Pleiades, the seven stars. But you worship him who made them. And you know, we're coming up here in the end of the 20th century to a time for the anniversary of the nativity of Jesus. And you know what God did, the Father, when he introduced Jesus into the world? He turned the whole heavens into a great celestial pageantry that it just amazed the people of the ancient world, as it's amazing to scholars and astronomers today. But you know what he did was to manipulate all of those heavenly bodies in such a way that the Magi came all the way from the eastern country to Herod. And they said, we saw his star rising in the east. And that heavenly panoply of glory that was demonstrated by from a heavenly source. And you know, let's face it, we see many grand things here on earth that have been created by the movie industry, you know. Like the Spielbergs and the others who are, by the way, they should be given the credit for doing some grand and wonderful things pleasing to the eye. But you know, when God introduced his son into the world, he took the heavens and manipulated them in such a way that it told a grand story of the king of the earth being introduced. And you know, once that happened and it was all over, the next generation forgot all about it. They forgot it. And you know, the second century A.D., they forgot it. The third century. It's not until this modern time when we, through computers, can see easily what was happening back there. And we got planetariums and things like that, too. Do you know, all of a sudden, the modern world is going to be able to see. And we at ASK are going to be right in there to help the world see what God the Father did to introduce his Son into the world. He manipulated the whole heavens in a 3 to 2 BC period to be able to introduce his son, and it's grand beyond compare. And people, for the first time in 1900 years, pretty soon are going to be able to see the whole show. And I'll tell you, we of ASK, and that means you, are going to help us to show the whole world what the creator of Pleiades, what the creator of Orion, what the creator of the stars, did to introduce the firstborn son into the world. And he is the star that comes out of Jacob. It is he. It is not some kind of an idol. It's not some kind of a Kuan or a Moloch thing or some kind of a symbol that actually, even though it's arrived at as a modern time, it is not biblical because it has on it a type of an idolatrous nomenclature and a history that needs to be got rid of. And you know something? They will get rid of it. These things. Now, it's not that the symbol itself is of itself wrong, but it's the interpretation behind it, you see. There's nothing wrong with any type of a symbol, but it's the thought behind it that makes you act that way. Now, in Amos here, he gives five different intensities of prophecy, which I want to point out to you. And this, we're going to have to close on this, but you have to read this whole book of Amos itself. I'm just giving you an overview. And this is coming from an individual who does not have the prophetic rank upon him, you understand? He's just an ordinary layman. He's a farmer. Well, really, he's a shepherd out of the fields. God can take out of just the common folk, so to speak, a man to go to the kings of the earth and to tell them the truth. And this is what Amos was doing. And the power that he had was absolutely fantastic. He said in chapter 4 here, he gives five intensities of what he is going to do, God is going to do to ancient Israel. These five also pertain to modern Israel today. And he says in verse 6, I have given you cleanness of teeth in all your cities and want of bread in all your places. Yet you have not returned unto me, saith the Lord. In other words, he judged them at one time, but they still didn't return. I want you to notice the phrase at the end of verse 6, yet you have not returned unto me, saith the Lord. If you go down to verse 2, he says something else that he has done to judge them, to be able to bring them back to their senses. And you know what it says at the end of verse 8 of this second point? Yet you have not returned unto me, saith the Lord. Then he goes into sending them blasting and mildew and things of that nature. At the end of verse 3, this is the third. And you know what it says? I should say the end of verse 9. This is the third point. Yet you have not returned unto me, saith the Lord. And what do we find at the end of verse 10? Yet you have not returned unto me, saith the Lord. And you know what he says at the end of verse 11? He gives the fifth. And the fifth is always the most intense. And he says, yet you have not returned unto me, saith the Lord. Now, with these five intensities of punishment that he gives, to wake them up, to make them better, to get them to change their minds, if they go five times, I'm going to show you, and Isaiah has the same thing. He uses exactly five different judgments, greater intensity coming down. At the end of the fifth judgment, here's what he says in chapter 4 and verse 12. Therefore, thus will I do unto you, O Israel, and because I will do this unto you, prepare to meet your God, O Israel. Now, here is the time, because he has sent judgments, and they refused at this juncture to repent. And the judgments get more severe in the fifth. But the thing is this, yet you have not returned to me, so okay, Israel, get prepared to meet your God. For lo, he that formed the mountains, he that created the wind, he that declares unto man what is his thought, that makes the morning darkness, treads upon the high places of the earth, the Lord, the God of hosts is his name. Now, he's going to intervene. He's going to intervene on behalf of Israel, but on behalf of these other nations too that are mentioned, and on behalf of the whole world. What we have to start to realize is that Amos gave these prophecies here at the upper part of the 8th century B.C. This was when those very nations that we have mentioned there were in existence. The prophecies deal with those people back there. And by the way, the prophecies came true. There is no question. But like it says in the book of Ecclesiastes, the wisest man who ever lived, his name was Solomon, says, what happened at one time will also happen again. And what did the Apostle Paul? He said, these things have been recorded for you, so that you who are living at the end of the age may have instruction, may have wisdom, may have understanding. When you go to the book of Revelation, which is about the second coming of Jesus to this earth, the second coming of our Lord, the Christ of heaven and earth, when he comes, he is coming with power and authority. He's coming in glory. He's coming with judgment. That's quite true. He's coming with an earthquake that is absolutely going to be the biggest that's ever occurred, that the only thing that can be compared to it is the one in the time of Amos. But Amos's prophecies took place, and he wants people to know this. The earthquake had already occurred, you see, when Amos wrote down the prophecies. But he said the prophecies were given, my dear folks, 2 years before the earthquake. In other words, it's a signal, if you can see it, connecting with the book of Zechariah, chapter 14, and the second advent of Christ, when his feet touch on the Mount of Olives, and even the reference there to the earthquake in Amos is mentioned, connected with the 16th chapter of the book of Revelation, which in association with the 19th, explains things that are going to happen at the end time with the true second coming of our Lord back to this earth. And remember this about the book of Revelation. When you look at the book of Revelation, John, or in this case, Christ Jesus himself, he takes prophecies from all over the Old Testament, from different time periods, different areas, and things of that nature, combines them together into one to show what's going to happen in our day. I'm telling you this, pay attention to Amos, because 2 years before the great earthquake of the future is going to take place, you're going to see these events happening in Israel. Keep your eyes on the Middle East. Interesting times are just on the horizon. This concludes the B-side of this lecture, Amos, a prophecy for today.